mana.
Yeah, it couldn't have been better time. Just like me, my best play. Idiot. Yeah, it deserved. Right, back to the start.
Fucking dickhead.
Welcome back to Under the Abbey Stand. And who the fuck is Harry Kane? It's been an eventful summer full of World Cup action, which we'll discuss later. But now it's back to the grind. Another season ahead of us. Another journey deep into the human psyche of supporting Cambridge United. I'm Jack Swindlehurst. Joining me this Christmas Eve is a man who is allegedly responsible for over 50% of the 40 million pints drunk during England-Columbia. That's Tom Walker.
Yeah, that's true. Nervous.
You're proud of
yourself. Probably responsible for about 50% of the sweat as well. And just worry and just fear. But we got through it. And we go again.
And to his left, a man who, after England's triumph over Sweden, was caught in an IKEA toilet. Let's just say meatballs deep. It's Julian Roberts, everyone.
I'm proud of every single moment of my life.
It's been a long old summer. It's been a hot old summer here in Cambridge, but we've not let up. We've been doing plenty over the summer, and here we are now back in our usual environment, a sweaty radio studio in the centre of Cambridge, and we're here to talk all things Cambridge United before the League Two season begins. So it's going to be an interesting one, boys, isn't it?
I would like to say I'm looking forward to it, but the thought of having to go and watch over 50 Cambridge United games over the next 9 months, having done 4 months of watching some of the best football in my life, 4 weeks, sorry, makes me feel a little bit sick.
Yeah, I'll probably agree with that. I think if you'd asked me probably a couple of weeks ago if I was ready for the season to start, I'd probably say definitely no. I was pretty tired, to be honest, of football after all that. It was a pretty emotional summer, bit of a roller coaster, but you know, we're what, as we record, what, 2 or 3 days away from the start of the season now, and I think we're pretty ready for it to come back, and you know, we go again, and hopefully we can pick up where we left off, essentially.
Yeah, it's been a lot to talk about as a football fan, and maybe we've kind of, this has crept up on us a little bit at the start of the League Two season. It's going to be interesting to see if, you know, all this, there's a lot of positivity around Cambridge United. You know, we finished the season strongly as a unit last season, and Joe Dunn has inspired a new belief, much like a Gareth Southgate of League Two.
Well, exactly. It's kind of weird, this whole optimism. I'm very optimistic. I'm feeling very good about it. I'm very excited. But when you look at it on paper, objectively, there isn't that much to really get that excited about. Like, a lot of other teams in the league have done some amazing business. A lot of other teams finished stronger than we did. And obviously there's going to be optimism there. But at the end of the day, we've signed 3 decent players. We've got a similar squad. I don't know, there's nothing massive that's happened. Do you know what I mean? We haven't gone out and signed 6 amazing players. But I'm still massively optimistic about the next 9 months.
Yeah, it's interesting. As a fair weather Cambridge United fan, we all know I've got a history that covers the length and breadth of our fair nation. And I was back up in Carlisle at the weekend, and I felt like I was having a very similar conversation. Even though Carlisle, they've had some real trouble over the summer with the heat, and Brunton Park is covered in like moss and algae. The Warwick Road end, because of how poorly it's been kept throughout the winter, the summer. So it's kept up very well when it's flooded with like 10 metres of water, but as soon as a bit of heat comes, Brunton Park completely dies, and the fans are in absolute uproar because the ground is, you know, needs a good spring clean. But they're a team very much that mirror Cambridge's kind of progression back to the Football League, kind of stagnancy in League Two to a point. Obviously, Carl have been there a little bit longer, back in there a bit longer, but they've gone up and down a bit. And equally, you could go there and there's some fans there who kind of feel like this is their season. You know, they've got rid of Reggie Lamb.
I think fundamentally, though, you said it the other day, Tom, that there's a lot of optimism and it's very possible that we'll get into the playoff spaces, but it's just even more as likely that we'll just occupy that 12th spot, which can finish the season 12th. Carlisle will be 13th.
Yeah, I mean, it's an absolutely kind of unique start to the season in a lot of ways. You know, we go into this season as a club, as a structure of a club that is completely different from what we started last season. in terms of a different head coach, a different chairman, a different board of directors, no chief executive in place, and yet somehow we just want to things to go exactly the same as they did the last time we saw Cambridge United play, which obviously saw us, in, you know, on a run of form that, you know, replicated over a course of a season, would see us not only comfortably in the playoffs but actually challenging the top three. And a lot of the time, certainly in the season since we've been back in the league, you know, slipping into those top three places. So I think the real thing, the kind of theme of the summer, I think, from Cambridge United's perspective, has definitely been just continuity. As you say, we've not really brought anything in. Louis John, obviously from Sutton, cover across the back four. Reggie Lamb from Carlisle replaces, kind of that bit of dynamism that perhaps we've lost from, you know, like Pierre Mingoya, who's obviously left. And then obviously George Taft, whether you call him a signing or not, is one thing. Because again, he's been here on loan about 67 times, and now it's just a case of getting him here permanently. So really, I mean, other than sort of one or two who have left, some will be more disappointed about than others. Obviously Uche, who's now gone to Hearts and has had a really good start there, albeit in kind of, I think it's Scottish League Cup action, which, you know, we can talk about the merits of that another time. But
load of farmers playing football, you know, it's nice to see.
He was a big part of our team over the last sort of 18 months, really. And, you know, so other than that, really, it's the same squad. And, you
but
know,
I think my point is that, like, we haven't gone out and signed someone like John Okunde or Christian Dennis,
no,
who is going to score 20 league goals this season. Do you know what I mean? We haven't gone out and signed a real marquee player who's definitely going to have an impact on this league. Like, you could look at Jose Baxter at Oldham, like I say, Okunde, Kane Hemmings at County. There's so many other teams that have gone out and signed these big players. We haven't done that. But don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to be critical. I'm massively optimistic about this team as well. I feel like Joe Dunn, what he does particularly well is, I mean, you were talking about this the other day, Tom, is his improvement of fringe players within the squad. So if you look at pre-season, this is someone a lot of people have been talking about. Adi Aziz's record in pre-season has been exceptional. Now, I know a lot of the time we've been playing a few boys, you know, who've got together from Impington Village College and just got together at Histon round, you know, on the rec, and they've come up against Cambridge United. But he's still scored, what is it, eight?
Nine goals. Nine. In pre-season is pretty enviable, you know, for any striker. You can only play the opposition you're playing. And also, we were talking before the show, before this podcast, about how whilst the new signings might not be particularly inspiring, it's fringe players from the season before who maybe have proved their worth in this pre-season. Aziz, the obvious choice, but also Osadebe's come in and made more of an impression. And, you know, players like that coming in,
even younger players like Tom Knowles,
yeah,
Norville Williams has done particularly well. It's those sorts of players. He's obviously, there's a few reasons why he hasn't gone out and signed a lot of players. But I think a lot of it is like exactly what you say, like continuity in the squad, getting that squad together. And obviously it worked in the last 3 months of his tenure. You do have to look at the context of the end of the season. We weren't really playing for much. There wasn't a lot of pressure on us. We did seem to be playing pressure-free a lot of the time. If we can continue that run of form at the start of the season, then obviously who knows?
So for all the positivity that's kind of surrounding Cambridge United, you know, a hatful of goals scored, admittedly, against lower league sides, and, you know, a good fair against a tough Millwall side, a 2-0 loss, but, you know, there was no disgrace. Of course, Tom Elliott coming back in that game. But for all that, there's always the wolf at the door for Cambridge United, and I feel like the wolf might be a very Rotherham-shaped wolf ready to snatch George Maris away.
Do you know what would be even funnier? Is if you just printed over 100 fanzines where you'd picked out George Maris as the star player for the U's, and then the day they get sent out, the rumour comes out.
Yeah.
That would be...
It's a strange one.
Irony.
Like, it's very similar and very different to last year in a couple of ways. Obviously, with Luke Berry going to Luton this time last year, really, we're losing probably our best player, would we agree?
Definitely.
I mean, we've said it in the fanzine, which I'm sure we'll come on to a bit later. We've said that he's our star man. He's the one that we would or will turn to, you know, for a goal, for a bit of creativity. And we're probably going to lose him, it looks like,
the
you know,
a few
days before the season starts. But I don't think there's that much room to be too angry about it or too unhappy with it. It's Rotherham coming in at the end of the day. That's kind of where he's from, for that area.
They're in the Championship.
Like, we're probably going to get a decent fee. And let's not forget, he's only got 1 year left on his contract at this moment in time. So there's every chance that we could turn down a bid of, say, let's say somewhere between £200,000 and £300,000, which at the moment to us is pretty significant money and pretty important money. And then we could be sat here having finished mid-table again and we'll lose him for nothing. So I think I think it represents a pretty, you know, a pretty positive mark on the recruitment team's kind of sheet, really. We've taken him from Barnsley. He was released. No one had ever heard of him. No one. Like, you know, there was no one saying, oh, maybe we should go out and get him. He sounds like a promising young player. No one had mentioned him. He came out of nowhere. And we've clearly seen something in him. We've worked on that. We've developed him into a player who's been linked with numerous Championship clubs and will now be going for multiple hundreds of thousands of pounds. So if we can replicate that kind of business model, then who knows? Maybe we've got a successful future in that regard. But, you know, obviously we'd all love him to stay, but sometimes I think when that sort of offer comes in, you've just got to kind of say, well, he deserves his move and we'll just take what we can get for him, really.
Let's make it clear now as well. It's only at the time of recording, this is only a rumour.
Yeah.
But the problem is, as you've just outlined, it makes so much sense. He's from Sheffield. Apparently, moving near home was cited as one of the reasons that he wanted to go. He's capitalising on the best form of his career at the back end of last season. Like you say, he's only got 1 year on his contract left anyway. So it makes sense for him to go. Obviously, I would be gutted because, like you say, I think he's our best player. He's the man we're going to turn to. And there's a big hole in that team if he goes, in my opinion.
Yeah, we were talking before about, you know, how you fill that hole. And if Cambridge don't recruit, you know, it's a short time. The transfer window, as we were speaking before, has changed. the end of August is no longer a thing. So, you know, if Cambridge don't recruit and don't fill that hole, Julian, you suggested pulling Giovanni Brown in, filling that hole, you lose width. You know, we've lost width already with, you know, players like Mingoya going. It's going to leave a hole. But also, like you say, Tom, it's, you know, positive recruitment, but also Cambridge United need to learn that for every player you positively recruit and help grow, you do need to be able to fill that void with another player.
Yeah, of course. And I would probably say that if he went, we would have to bring someone in. And I know that we've talked about kind of the merits of what Joe Dunn's done in terms of taking a player who perhaps hasn't featured as much, and we can talk about maybe at this moment maybe an Osadebe or a Lewis stepping up, or maybe even one of the younger lads who have featured in pre-season quite a bit, and, you know, maybe them filling that void. But I think at this moment in time, especially if you're getting a bit of money for someone like George Maris of that quality, of that proven quality, you do need to go out and get someone who's, you know, capable of putting in a decent season at this level and have done so, rather than someone like Osadebe who, you know, perhaps he's got potential, like Lewis who's got potential but haven't really shown it yet, and going, well, Maris is gone, this is your chance. And if it, I think what we have to make quite clear is that if Maris goes, that'll be a big dent to any hopes that we've got of achieving anything. And, you know, to kind of scramble that back, you would have to bring one or maybe two good quality players at this level in, and I think we could probably do with a striker anyway, to be honest. So I think if Maris goes, then we need to bring in two to make up for that. And I'm not sure if that'd be an unpopular opinion or not. I think a few people would probably agree.
I've seen a few people saying that he wouldn't be that big of a loss, but I just don't understand where that sort of view comes from. As in, if you just look at the last few months of last season,
yeah,
it's clearly going to be.
I think that kind of opinion maybe is born out of people having kind of lower expectations, where they think, well, we're going to finish mid-table anyway, why not rake in the money while it's there? I think at this moment in time, we're a team that would challenge pretty strongly for the playoffs. Based on the evidence of last season, that it's the same squad, it's the same manager. The league is probably stronger, maybe.
I think overall,
I think the league's stronger, even if there isn't a standout like Luton. I know Accrington finished top, but when you look at Luton's squad, there isn't a team like that who you could see taking someone apart, say Cambridge United, for example, 7-0 or something like that.
Never happened.
I don't know. I've erased it. But, you know, you look at like your Notts Counties, Lincolns, Mansfield, MKs, and then you've got teams like Forest Green, who might even improve if they keep on to Christian Doige, and there are teams that are going to be a threat this season to Cambridge. I mean, Jack, mate, you laugh, but Forest Green beat us 5-2 last year,
and
they've improved since then. So
I'm
I think the point I'm trying to make is that if we are to challenge, I think we can. Maris is a player who's absolutely central to that, and I think that's pretty obvious to most people, to be honest.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting development throughout the season. But like you say, we mentioned fleetingly there, and whilst we're on this point, I think it's a good juncture to do it. Giovanni Brown's rise to fame and, you know, a step up to be a Football League player last season was awesome. With him looking like he's going to be a Cambridge United player going forward, what do we expect from him in this season? You know, this could be a massive season for him. Obviously, last season was massive, but if he's going to carry on that progression, how important do we think Giovanni Brown's going to be with or without Maris?
Well, I think he'll have to step up even more. I think the biggest loss for someone like Giovanni, well, not loss, but we've lost a player like Uche, who is obviously this big talisman in our squad. He'd score a lot of goals. He was always at the centre of play, blah, blah, blah. If Giovanni was having a quiet day, do you know what I mean? You'd have Uche on the other hand, or you'd have Maris. If you lose Maris and Uche, Giovanni suddenly becomes the central player in that attacking lineup.
Mm.
I think it's the right time for him, though. I think last season was very much just a bedding in process, and I don't think anyone would have complained too much had he had half the season that he'd had last year.
Absolutely.
And a lot of it, I think, with Giovanni, and maybe people who don't go that often might not see it, and I can understand why, because he didn't have a phenomenal goal return. He didn't have a phenomenal return in terms of assists and things like that. But when you watch a player like that sometimes, you can just see that they're a little bit special. And I'm not going to sit here and say that he's going to be the next, you know, the next Kylian Mbappe or something like that.
Why not?
Because he's not French.
So, right, fair.
Yeah. Good point, very
great point. Good point, well made, to be fair.
And that's the only reason. But no, you know, I think that this is the time for him to turn that kind of that promise and that excitement into something a little bit more concrete. And, you know, I'm not sure he's the sort of player that you'd necessarily be relying on for 20, 25 goals a season, but he can certainly create them.
Mm.
And that's something that I think he'll have to start stepping up doing, because he is a professional footballer now and he's been a professional footballer for a year. And this is the time to start delivering.
Right, coming up in the rest of the pod, we've got a preview of Cambridge's season, of course, the League Two season. Who's going to go up, who's going to go down, and who's going to finish in that glorious 12th place? We're going to talk to you a little bit about the World Cup. I don't know if you've been living under a rock, but it's been a pretty big summer. And then, of course, we've got a special game for you at the end of the show. A bit different to football Jenga, but still as dramatic too. Right, so we've looked at Cambridge United pre-season. They're meagre transfers, but still good recruitment from the U's. And now we're going to look forward to the coming season, of course. The last season ended with a glorious 5-0 smashing of Port Vale at the Abbey. And the tables are turned. We're now going to go to Port Vale on Saturday. And you two boys are going to be there.
Oh.
At the Potteries.
And so is that man Leon Legg. Obviously, it's completely different from the last game of the season, and I don't think anyone would be going into it thinking that, oh, well, we beat them 5-0 end of the season, why don't we, you know, it's a guaranteed win sort of thing. They've recruited pretty well, I think. You know, Leon Legg's one of them. They've brought in Ricky Miller as well, one or two from kind of the non-league.
We were just talking about Ricky Miller earlier. Surely at some point, someone's got to start getting goals out of Ricky Miller in the Football League.
Yeah,
it has to happen.
I think it's perfectly set up for him at Port Vale as well. I think Peterborough, when he went there, might have been a bit of a step too far, maybe in some ways. But you look at what Port Vale have got going forward, and Tom Pope and Ricky Miller up front, I think anyone would say that's a pretty decent combo at this level. Ricky Miller's got the goals in him, and it's about getting them out of him. And if anyone can kind of take that bit of pressure off him, then it is Tom Pope. So I think there'll be a tough team, and going to Port Vale is one of those games where it always sounds a bit tough, you know. You're up in the Potteries. It's, you know, can they do it on a, well, it'll be a warm Saturday afternoon in Stoke, or just outside Stoke. But, you know, we'll be competitive. We'll see.
I think it speaks volumes about Port Vale, whereas for promotion they are 5-1, and if you look at relegation they're only 11-1. They're kind of 8th placed in both of those tables, so the bookies don't really know what type of creature Port Vale are going to be. I don't think anyone else does. Cambridge United have a big chance to make a big statement. They've got a tough game coming up, the game after a home tie with Notts County. So a big statement needs to be made by the U's, I think, on Saturday.
There won't be many teams who have a tougher start than that in the league this season. Notts County, probably rightly so, favourites for the title and for, you know, automatic promotion and all the other markets at the kind of top end of the league. they've recruited so well this summer. They've invested really heavily. Kane Hemmings, Christian Dennis, Enzio Boldevine from Crawley, and also Nathan Thomas on loan from Sheffield United. David Vaughan, 35 years old. Some might say legs have gone, but at this level, he's an absolutely quality player. And I mean, they're, as I say, they're rightly so favourites for the title, and they will pose a genuine threat on the Saturday after.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Nolan at the helm as well, a man with a wealth of footballing experience, and he certainly knows how to get kind of gritty with it. And Notts County are rightfully fancied, and it'll be interesting to see how Cambridge United deal with that in their first home game of this 2018-19 season. I mean, the Port Vale game, of course, you know, you walk before you can run. That's a game they need to kind of manage. And we look at the head-to-head between Cambridge and Port Vale. Cambridge winning 5-0 last time out, as we said, at the Abbey. They lost up at the Potteries in that horrible December game. Julian, you said you went down to that.
Yeah, that was shite.
Yeah, that was like really kind of peak Derry era, just terrible football. Do you know sometimes when you sit there and you think, like, right, what could make this day worse? And
me and you didn't watch the second half.
Probably rightfully so. Yeah, so, like, everything was ticked off. So trains were a bit dodgy that day up to Stoke. It was snowing. We didn't know whether the game was going to be on or not. Cambridge turned up. Cambridge put in a terrible performance. We didn't see either of the goals because they were just before and just after half time, which is a really, really unfortunate time to score a goal. Because everyone's going to be queuing up for a beer at half time or whatever else. You know,
that was, sorry for the swearing, but that was one of the most awful days.
To kind of open, it's quite kind of fitting in many ways that we should open with a game like that, which was, some would say, maybe worse than Luton, just in the fact that Port Vale at the time were terrible. I think they had the worst home record in the league. And I said earlier that it's always a tough place to go. I mean, objectively, it was not a tough place to go at that time of the season, because they had the worst home record in the league. And who can forget Uche's red card that day?
Oh, my God.
Julian Roberts, clearly.
Yeah.
Two bookings in about 3 minutes, and he sprinted off the pitch like a genuinely world-class sprinter at the end. I thought he was celebrating it. No, it should be better than that, but that's not saying a lot.
And head-to-head wise, before that, 2001-2002, they conceded 9 goals at Port Vale, scoring only 2 in a 5-0 and a 4-2 loss. So they've not had great trips to Port Vale in the 21st century. So now's the time to right that, right?
You'd hope so. I hope so.
I was expecting an air of confidence this far forward. We've kind of gone through. It seems like a pretty positive podcast so far.
But is anyone else finding this preview really hard? Just not just this game. I'm talking about the whole season. Like, I can kindly, we can look at last season's form. We can look at, like, yeah, Joe Dunn looks like a good manager. Again, we're only basing that on 3 months.
Well, there's nothing to go on.
The whole thing, even like vaguely looking at, yeah, some decent transfers, but then they were awful for the first part of last season until Neil Aspin came in. So maybe they'll be quite good. Maybe, who knows? I mean, who knows? Maybe Forest Green are going to win the league. Maybe Cheltenham are going to come second. Do you know what I mean?
I think that's one of the things with League Two in general, just as a league, is that at the start of the season, generally, maybe other than a few seasons when you've had like Pompey and Luton and Plymouth and things like that, where you know they're always going to be somewhere up there at the end of the season, you can essentially take the league and throw it up in the air, and where it lands is as good as a prediction as you'll ever make. Mm. Because probably between maybe those top three or four teams who look a little bit further ahead than the rest, there's not really a lot between the rest.
Not at all.
And, you know, we look at, you know, the teams in the league, what, like Northampton, Swindon, Bury, you know, ourselves, Exeter, Carlisle. They're all, you know, in one way or another, pretty much unrecognisable from what they were last season. Mm. Like, Exeter specifically, obviously, they've lost Tisdale. That's going to be a massive rebuilding job. It is maybe a really little version of David Moyes and Man United and that kind of thing. And, you know, then you look at Tranmere, they're coming up, they'll have all that momentum. And it's really hard to say at this time. And I mean, I know that's kind of why we're here, to kind of try and provide a bit of a...
So what we're saying is we're basically covering our backs completely and saying, even though we've taken it upon ourselves to be sort of authority on it...
I've got absolute splinters.
Yeah.
We're just saying... Sat on the fence. Absolutely sat on the fence.
You know, we don't know what's going to happen, so...
On that note, what you should do is go to the UTAS shop and buy our fanzine, which has got half of it is a season preview. So that's good, isn't it, that we've written that. And
I think you always have a rough idea in League Two.
At the end of the day, someone's going to mess up, and someone's going to do better than expected.
Surprise package. Julian, you've called out Cheltenham like out of the blue the earlier today, and I was like a bit surprised at that. But you all, you know, a surprise package is generally a surprise. Well, it's in the name.
I fancy Cheltenham. I think they're a decent team. They've signed a few decent players. Ben Tozer, Chris Hussey.
I mean, I think the thing with Cheltenham is obviously that they've lost Issa, who is quite clearly a little bit too good for this level, what some might say.
Of course. But
I think what they've done is they've gone out and strengthened the squad overall rather than bringing in another player of that kind of quality. I mean, I think there's a few who have got that kind of potential to surprise. I think Forest Green are one. I mentioned him a little bit earlier. You know, Ruben Reed and Christian Doidge up front on this level is pretty good, really.
I think Tranmere as well. There's always a team coming up from the conference always seems to do well.
It's definitely not going to be Macclesfield.
Yeah, I'll tell you that for free.
Tranmere
are an interesting one because I've listened to a lot of previews from a lot of different kind of sources and different podcasts and read some stuff as well. And all the things that I've read, either have Tranmere doing really well or really badly.
Really?
Yeah. I listened to something the other day that had them, I think, second. And they've also been tipped for relegation by a lot of places. I just don't think there's any basis on Tranmere necessarily to say they're going to do very well. They've lost key players. I've not really replaced them.
Mickey Mellon's a pretty good manager.
Mickey Mellon is a good manager, but they are coming into a better level with a squad which probably isn't better than the one they had in the conference, which, let's not forget, lost the playoff final at Boreham Wood. So we'll see. I think from my point of view, I think that the ones that I'll be looking at with a bit of an eye, maybe for a bet to finish in the top half or maybe even the top seven, would actually be Crawley. I think they've lost a couple of key players, that's undoubtable, but I think what they've brought in has been really good. Felipe Morais and Roman Vansolo, they're players with experience at this level, so I think what's gone out is perhaps less important than what's come in this instance. And you know, I think they'll probably be somewhere around the evens mark, probably 11 to 10 ish to finish in the top half, and I think for an accumulator that's a pretty decent shout. So that, get your money on it, chaps.
That is one of the, you couldn't have gone almost a more outside bet for promotion than Crawley. According to Sky Bet.
I'm not saying they'll go up. I just think as a bet for a little bit of value, either top half or top seven, I think is pretty good. The thing is, if you look at some of the other teams, I think you look at the difference in price between say Carlisle and Crawley to go up. And Carlisle are 5-1 and Crawley are 10-1. So you get double the money. And for me, Crawley are in a much better position. Carlisle are going through massive transition. They've had a really terrible window. They've not brought anyone in. They've lost a lot of players. They've got a new manager. Who knows how that's going to go after, you know, a long time with Keith Curl. Crawley have got an exciting young coach, Harry Kewell. They've brought in good players, but yet they're double the price to get promoted. That's my thinking there, and my thinking isn't that they're necessarily going to go up. It's just when you're looking for a bit of value in these markets, sometimes it's worth just having a look at, you know, respective prices.
A bit of on the spot for you then, lads. So the teams to get promoted automatically, I think we're kind of in a bit of a collective agreement about.
I think it's the top three, as it is in
Notts County, Lincoln and MK Dons.
Absolutely, I think the betting, they're usually not too far wrong, and I don't think they'll be wrong this time.
I'm not sure what order, but no. I think that's the top three.
And then we've got picking the playoffs, and a playoff winner is nigh on impossible before a season started, let alone five games before the end. But I mean, you've talked about Crawley being a surprise package. Cambridge United, if they play the cards right, you know, avoid that horrible run they have every season of, you know, 12 games winless or whatever it is, could be there. But you know, other teams like Northampton and Swindon are up there odds wise. It's so hard to call, isn't it? Exeter, of course, came so close last time.
I'd actually be looking at Northampton and Bury as teams who would probably be taking two of those top seven spots. Certainly potentially. I mean, Bury especially, I mean, they're a club in a little bit of turmoil in terms of they had a terrible season last year, like really, really just dire start to finish. But you look at their squad on paper and it shouldn't have gone down last year, and it should do well this year. They've still got Jermaine Beckford, for example, and that is pretty ridiculous in League 2. They've got Nicky Adams, who's won promotion a couple of times, been in the team in the season at this level. He's one of the better players in the league. They've got a squad really which should compete. I mean, they've got Ryan Lowe as manager, who's a bit inexperienced, but you've got to start somewhere, and with a squad like that, maybe they can pull it all together. And Northampton, similar, you know, they've got an inexperienced manager, but a squad of players who really at this level were pretty good. Matt Crooks is one who absolutely smashed it with Accrington, went up to Rangers, and although that didn't work out, he's clearly good enough at this level to make things happen. So, you know, I think as we say, it's really difficult to kind of predict exactly what's going to happen in the league, especially because there's not a few really like big clubs as there have been in pretty much every season. You'd be surprised if the likes of Bury and Northampton aren't at least
top
challenging.
Half. Right, yeah, fine. But you
you'd be surprised
season.
Equally if say Crawley find themselves challenging.
Right, so I'm saying it's like every other season. There's teams that are going to challenge. There's teams that are going to maybe be near
the bottom.
Of
course, yeah.
But then it's League Two, isn't it? It's just going to be all over the place. That's why this preview's pointless.
Exactly. So we
just turn it off.
Just turn it off now. While we're on it, though, we might as well all agree that teams that are going to be relegated are Yeovil and Macclesfield.
Yeah. Done.
Great.
Move on.
Okay. So right, coming up to end the pod today, we're going to look back to that glorious time in Russia, the fantastic World Cup, and then we're going to bring you some very exciting competition news and news of how to get involved with UTAS. Right, boys. It's so distant in the memory, but yet so close. England in Russia did such a great job, but it wasn't quite close enough.
Yeah, we nearly got there. Nearly got to the World Cup final. We were only about half an hour away in that really disappointing night against Croatia, but I can't help but feel a little bit gutted, even though we did really well to get where we got to. And I don't care about who we played, because that's kind of the nature of a tournament. You know.
You can only beat what's put in front of you, do you know what I mean? You can't.
By definition, at this World Cup, Sweden were a better team than Germany, because they got to the quarterfinals and Germany went out of the group stages. Maybe if we'd have played Germany, we'd have beaten them as well, because clearly they were just terrible this year.
Yeah. No, we wouldn't have beaten Germany, sorry. Like, regardless of how bad Germany are, we still would have lost. That's only because of England and Germany, do you know what I mean?
You can see the point I'm trying to make, though. It doesn't really matter who you play, because that's just kind of the way the tournament goes. Like, I remember at Euro 2016, Wales didn't have a particularly tough run to the semi-finals, and they got loads of credit, but because it's England, somehow it was all handled. And also, let's talk about Croatia as well. What was their run to the
Run was even easier.
Yeah, exactly.
Denmark, Russia, England, and then France.
Yeah.
That's even easier than Colombia, Sweden, Croatia.
Oh, of course, definitely. But I think on England, I think the main thing, and the main thing that's come out of the tournament was just that kind of connection that we got back with the fans, which, you know, I don't know the last time that it was kind of as strong as it is now, and hopefully will be kind of going forward.
In my lifetime, I don't remember ever having a World Cup where I was
just genuinely
just that happy and involved in it. Like, obviously whenever England win I'm happy, but there was some connection with Southgate and the whole team this year that people say the last time it happened was Italia 90.
Don't look at me, I was 6 months old. I don't remember it. Like, keep on looking over to me like I'll be like, oh yeah, back in the 90s when we had black and white TV.
Well, we were kind of hoping that you were going to compared to 66.
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't quite remember that. But no, there was a great community. But I think England got through to this point, regardless of their opposition, not really on quality. It was like that pluckiness. It was like that kind of never-say-die attitude. You know, the Harry Maguire.
There was a spirit
syndrome.
To the team, wasn't it?
There was a spirit,
yeah,
wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. But then I think at the end, we came undone against... It was so obvious. About 60 minutes in, England are 1-0 up. And you could almost see it. Mm. I haven't watched it back, because I don't dare. But if you were to, I bet you see it. There's a moment of panic where they suddenly realise they're half an hour from World Cup final. And none of those England players, actually one of those England players in that starting 11, has ever been in a game as important as that. And that's Jordan Henderson playing in the semi-final against Roma for Liverpool this season.
Yeah.
Look at Croatia, on the other hand. Modric has won the Champions League 3 times in a row. Rakitic has won it at least once. He's been in at least 2 finals. Mm-hmm. Mandzukic has been in like 3 or 4 finals.
Scored
he's won
as well.
Yeah, exactly. Then you've got Subasic, who's been to a semi-final. Vrsaljko, who won the Europa League this year.
Been to Lovren. Champions League finals as well.
Exactly, yeah. So you're looking at half of their team has been in that sort of pressure, that momentous scenario where you've really got to keep your head, study the moment and keep calm, know that there's a pass coming, know that you'll get a chance, and they did, and they slowly grew into it, and they never ever looked like they weren't going to win after that
goal went in, the equaliser. I think it was Croatia all the way. I'm surprised England didn't lose in normal time, and I think a lot of the players were, they just didn't have enough to get through to that. And if they'd met France in the final, it could have been an absolute bloodbath.
It could have been, but then we'd have still been in a World Cup final in my lifetime, and I wasn't expecting to beat France. It's more, what's so heartbreaking about that Croatia game was how close we were. Like you say, we were 1-0 up, 5 minutes in, early goal, settle the nerves, perfect. And then you just... You, and then we missed... Oh, remember Kane?
The first half.
I've just remembered that.
I relive that. Months. I relive that time and time again. The chances in the first half. If you can't take those chances in the semi-final of the biggest competition on the planet, you will get punished. And England were. And, you know, there were half chances here and there. But after that, it was all Croatia. Shout out to Kieran Trippier. I mean, unreal.
Superb tournament.
On the world stage. Great tournament.
Yeah, amazing tournament.
Really,
he was,
you know.
He was exceptional.
He already had a great season for Spurs. That was never in doubt.
Had he had that good a season for Spurs?
He'd had a really good season. You know, He'd been decent.
Before the World Cup, no one was going into it thinking, oh, no, thank fuck we've got Kieran Trippier.
Clearly not a Spurs fan like me, mate. But no, yeah, you're probably right. But, you know, a load of players. You know, Harry Maguire was solid for Leicester when he, you know, played for them. He was solid for Hull. But Harry Maguire endeared himself in the hearts of people, you know, around the country. There was this...
Is anyone else... I still don't know how good Harry Maguire actually is.
I heard a brilliant
quote about Harry Maguire. I can't remember for the life of me where it was, but and it's possibly quite harsh, but the funniest thing I've heard on Harry Maguire is that when he was playing for England and he was playing that back three and he was kind of bringing the ball out past the halfway line, you couldn't help but feel like it looked like one of those Hollyoaks actors playing in like Soccer Aid. Yeah. It was just a little bit out of their depth. Yeah. Like, no, but he was absolutely superb.
And, no, he was brilliant.
That, I mean, that header against Sweden is one that you just remember forever.
It encapsulates him perfectly.
Oh, of course. But I think this summer was just one of them where you kind of go throughout the whole team and there's not really a single player that you could kind of really criticise. I mean, Sterling's the one that gets criticism, but he's always the one that gets criticism, yeah. Whether he's missing a chance in a World Cup quarterfinal, whether he's buying an ice cream on the beach in Marbella, yeah, or whatever, yeah, it is that he's doing at the moment. And I think the reasons for that are pretty obvious, but we won't go into that now because that's not what we're talking about. But, you know, I think overall that they're absolutely superb to a man. And I think if I had to pick a player, it sounds strange after the summer that we had, but I think I'd probably have to say Pickford was the one who comes out of it with the real credit.
So a great World Cup. Harry Kane, Golden Boot winner, 6 goals in the tournament, no goals in the knockout stages.
I can't help but feel like he picked up a knock.
Oh, he looked
against
knackered.
Colombia when
something twigged, didn't it? He didn't look the same player against Sweden or Croatia as he was. And I know we were playing Tunisia, Panama. I completely agree with you. There was something amiss for me with him.
I wouldn't be at all surprised to find out. I don't think it'll be kind of soon, but I think in the coming years we might find out. Oh well, had a bit of a knock against Sweden and against Croatia and against Belgium as well in that really just strange third place playoff.
Oh yeah,
I didn't watch that. Did
no, that's not. Even
I'll watch that. I was saying it was pretty bad. Mm. Just neither of them really wanted to be there. No. But, you know, I think it was one of them where, you know, this summer we were the joint best England team ever to leave the country in a World Cup tournament, and that's something to be pretty proud of. And I think we all had a bit of a cautious optimism about England this summer, that, you know, we've got Kane, we've got, you know, players in the top form of what they've ever really been. Henderson, captain of the teams who are Champions League finals, have said Kyle Walker's won the league with Man City, Raheem Sterling's won the league with Man City, even Delph's won the league, and that, you know, there's players in there who have been playing at the top level, you know, for their clubs, and there was a bit of a cautious optimism. And then when it was tied against Tunisia at 1-1 going into stoppage time, we thought, oh, here we go, same old story. And then we had that desire and that kind of grit to go out and grind out a result, which really is what's been missing for England in the last, certainly, probably since 98. Mm. Because, you look at the kind of squads that we've had since then, and, you know, people talk about this golden generation, and the quality's always been there. Of course it has, but it's just been that desire, and there's been explanations for why we didn't do as well as what we have. And, you know, I think it was Rio Ferdinand was saying it's because of the rivalries in the squad. I'm not sure I buy into that. But there is certainly something in it that having a squad that's completely together as it was over the summer results in what we've seen. And hopefully now is the time to build on it. So we'll move on to Euro 2020 and hopefully replicate that success.
The semi-finals and finals of which is at Wembley.
Exactly.
Don't forget the European Nations Cup, I think it's called.
The Nations League.
Spain and Croatia.
Absolutely. The game against Croatia again. Will be played behind closed doors. Because their fans were racist.
Well, screw those guys. That's why you lost in the final, you absolute nutters. 4-2, France won in the final. France were amazing.
Yep. Yeah. I think it was the Kylian Mbappe tournament, wasn't it?
It was. I
think.
I mean,
I know.
Him and Hansen.
The Hansen chin.
I know that Harry Kane won the Golden Boot, but Kylian Mbappe, first teenager scoring a World Cup final since Pele. I know Pele spent half his career making up the amount of goals that he scored. Yeah, but then Brazil, again, you know.
You never got the chance, did you? I mean,
no.
I'd love to have seen a 19-year-old Tom Walker.
Well, and really? I don't think Kylian Mbappe has had any kind of erection problems thus far as well, and Pele is full of... Is that before your time? Do you know that Pele...
What the fuck are you talking
listen, about?
Before you meant Tom Walker...
Well. No, sorry, not Tom Walker, but Pele... advertises like erectile dysfunction medication quite openly, right. But clearly that's a generational thing.
I can't wait to see Lionel Messi in 40 years doing that.
Exactly.
Do you know how Facebook like
Cristiano Ronaldo
the adverts? Tailors adverts for you?
Yeah.
Are you just seeing them all?
All of mine's just slippers and erectile dysfunction pills. Anyway, but yeah, Mbappe, great tournament. Already announced onto the world scene, but he's done bits now to. Announced himself as one of the world's best players. Pogba stepped up as well. Can't forget about him. And Croatia gave a great account of themselves in that final.
One player we haven't mentioned is Perisic, I've always rated Perisic. Always at World Cups as well. I'd see him playing for Croatia and I always rated him. He was stunning this World Cup, I thought, every game.
Mm. Yeah, obviously Modric as well, who won the Golden Ball in the end. He's just an unbelievable. I think probably...
Yeah.
For me, probably the best midfielder in the world at this time, and also a really good shout for the Ballon d'Or as well. I know it's been absolutely dominated by Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo really in the last kind of decade, but he's won the Champions League, taken Croatia to the World Cup final. That's as good a season as anyone's ever had, really. Certainly as good a year as anyone's had in the top players at this time. It was just so good for so many reasons, this World Cup.
Yeah.
It was just superb. I mean, the amount of quality goals were just unbelievable. I mean, you could sit here and just name them. I mean, Denis Cheryshev for Russia scored about four on his own.
All of his goals could have been goal bangers, weren't they?
Could have been goal in the tournament.
Nacho's against Portugal.
Do we agree that Pavard's was the best goal?
Pavard's was better than Nacho's.
Yeah, definitely.
And they were basically the same goal, so yeah. I think it had to be one of them.
Yeah.
Or Quaresma's, his signature move, isn't it? That little outside of the foot,
yeah.
20 yards out into the top corner.
Thing is with Quaresma, he does it 15 times.
And it comes off.
It comes off
once.
Less than once, already.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Doesn't even work.
Do those maths.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we had everything in that final. 6 goals, an own goal, and then that bizarre goal at the end. The final goal of the game, Lloris having a complete brain fart, already thinking about lifting the cup and just giving Mandzukic a goal.
It was a really fitting final.
Yeah.
Just, it was mad.
Yeah.
And we were talking off air just a minute ago. We said we wouldn't open the can of worms, but Croatia can feel really, really hard done by because for the penalty that the Griezmann put away to put France back in the lead after Perisic has scored.
There's a lot of disagreement on this, from a few people I've chatted to.
I am going to set the record straight and I'm going to explain it absolutely perfectly, right? The point of VAR is to rule out clear and obvious errors, okay? Just cast your mind back to that free, the penalty that was given. So it came from a corner, it was headed onto the hand of Mandzukic, I believe it was.
Perisic.
It was Perisic. It was headed onto the hand of Perisic, right? The referee gave a penalty.
He gave
a goal kick initially, so he didn't give a penalty, right? So he's seen that and he's decided that's not a penalty. VAR have said, right, you should go and have a look at it. So he went and had a look at it. He looked at it again and he changed his mind. Now for me, there is no way that you can say that is a clear and obvious mistake, because if you put 100 people in a room, 50 of them say it was a handball, 50 of them say it shouldn't have been a penalty.
But isn't this the whole point about VAR, that you can't perfect the
imperfect? Of
course, imperfect?
And that's why it seems bizarre to me. And I've seen people saying that it's been used really well at the World Cup. I'm not sure.
The thing I really don't like about it is I think only one time that I didn't see this happen is that normally if it's like, oh, is that a penalty, the referee hasn't given it, oh, VAR's wanting a review, normally every time, because the VAR have said it in his ear, he'll be like, I've probably made a mistake here, actually.
Yeah.
If not, they wouldn't have told me to go and review it. So then he's likely to overturn his decision every time. He's already been... His mind space has been infiltrated.
So what it is how do you refine it? Do you have a separate VAR referee who makes the decision for the referee, and then how many referees do you end up having?
I've got a suggestion.
Go on.
Why don't we have a referee, right, two linesmen and then a fourth official, and then we'll just leave it there.
Yeah.
And a bit of goal line technology as well.
That's nice. Of course, a little bit of that.
As a Cambridge United dedicated podcast, we have given so much airtime to the various like degrees of refereeing, officiation, like fifth officials, VAR, goal line technology.
This is perfect. Have you seen? You must have seen.
I've seen. I know exactly what you're going to say.
We've done a whole preview on Cambridge United versus Port Vale. I haven't mentioned that Trevor Kettle, the biggest shithouser in the world of refereeing.
I cannot disagree more. He is absolutely show business. I love Trevor Kettle.
He does it for a laugh.
It was funny, actually, because he was the referee on the first day last season away at Exeter. Penalty within 5 minutes. Open the daily season.
Let's mix this up on fucking board, lads. Come on.
Well, we had him against Newport, didn't we, a couple of seasons ago?
Oh, that was the funniest. When we won 3-2.
95th minute, penalty, red card. Of course it is. Big Trev Kettle stealing the show again.
Love it.
I can't wait. He's the lower league Mike Dean. Yeah. Honestly, if I could have a ref in Cambridge every week, I would. And it'd be worth the entry money alone.
So, yeah, there's plenty more where that came from coming up throughout the season. But we've got any other business, Tom Walker?
Listen, we've come out and we've produced a fanzine. It's got some amazing stuff in it. Matt Ramsey, Russ Greaves, Matt Caspel, Lewis Jones, some guy called Jack Swindlehurst.
Legend.
Will Hunting-Jones, Mike Barnes, Matthew Gooding, Vinyl Perez, and Max Rushton himself. Thank you all for contributing, if you're listening. You can go and buy it off our shop online. It's £3, or there'll be someone outside...
Somewhere.
Probably by Coral... Somewhere in that sort of... Somewhere on Newmarket Road. Somewhere in CB5. Somewhere in the region. You'll find him. He's short and he's got a beard. And he'll be shouting fanzines.
Hipster.
Yeah, that guy. And you can go buy one off him for £3. Or you can buy one online. And it's really good.
I think. Very, very aesthetically pleasing. Having seen a hard copy for the first time.
It's also the first time... it's the first fanzine I can remember since Matt Caspel himself... United in Endeavour, which was about 10, if not more, years ago.
Yeah, and if it can be probably half as successful as that, then I think we've done pretty well with that. I have to say I've seen it for myself and kind of the actual hard copy in the flesh for the first time today, and I think it looks superb.
Also, Sam Harris, illustration on Instagram, incredible. We've done a whole season preview. I've vented as how much I hate season previews already. So there's, you know, a lot in here to hate, but it's really good. He's done little illustrations of all the clubs' badges in the league, and they look fantastic, so thank you very much to him.
Yeah, absolute props to that. Morecambe's my favourite, loads more to come from that as well. This is the platform to move on.
This is number one. We're doing four this season, so the second one will be out when I can be bothered
next week.
So no,
let's do four in the first 4 weeks.
Yeah, and then done. It'll be October. So if you want to submit anything, just email us through abbeystandpod@gmail.com. Email for a pitch if you want, if you just before you waste your time, or just email for a finished piece, whatever you like. We've also got a website that's going to be updated more regularly this year, so just anything for that as well. Also, one last thing, we've got some merchandise. Now I want to say thank you to Jamie Cranwell here, friend of the pod. We've got a t-shirt, mug, keyring, bottle opener, and a few of his own original designs. Again, you can find that on our website, www.undertheabbeystand.com, and they're all great as well.
So talking of merch, it takes us quite nicely into competition time. So don't worry, faithful listeners, Football Jenga will be back later on in the season as a permanent fixture, as it always is. It'll throw up drama, we'll get it wrong. Sometimes it'll be good, sometimes it'll be less good. But for today, we've got a bit of an interesting competition for you, a bit of a merch-themed competition. So, of course, Cambridge United travelling to Port Vale this weekend, trying to think of a tenuous link. There wasn't one. But Port Vale's number one celebrity fan, Robbie Williams, we all know him.
Legend.
Singer. Not Robbie Williams.
Performed at the World Cup opening ceremony.
He did, yeah, and mentioned Port Vale.
Which was odd, I have to say.
And swore at the camera, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did he do that?
Because he was banned from Russia for a while because of that song...
Party Like a Russian.
Yeah, and then they got him back. And anyway, what we think is we would like you to come up with your best... Robbie Williams themed Cambridge United songs. An example
puns.
Being
puns.
Puns. It doesn't have to be songs. Anything to do with the man himself, the songs. You know, you've got a bit of artistic license. An example, Julian, would be
Let Me Entertain Yous.
Being A song by Robbie Williams called Let Me Entertain You, and sometimes people refer to Cambridge United as the U's. Let Me Entertain You's, okay? So if you want to get in contact, best way to do it is...
email, probably, abbeystandpod@gmail.com. Twitter's always good as well. Tom does a lot of the Twitter stuff.
We'll take him on Twitter.
Yeah.
We'll take him on Twitter.
And the rest of Instagram. The social media, just while we've got it, yeah?
At abbeystandpod.
Perfect. So what you'll get if you win this competition, we pick the winners. You know, there's no vote. This isn't a democracy. You'll get a mug, an Abbey Stand branded mug.
Imagine that. You're going to be sitting there in the morning.
Utas till I die, you'll be thinking.
And just think of Tom Walker instantly. Wow, it's the dream.
With a coffee in your hand.
With a whiskey in there.
Yeah, with an Irish coffee. and this merch looks... it looks slick, it looks good, it looks nice. I tell you what doesn't look so slick, good and nice, lads. It's Cambridge United's football kit.
The third one's all right.
Third one's all right.
I actually quite like the away shirt. I think that's pretty clever.
I think it's questionable. I think what's not quite as questionable, it's not quite as questionable as the placement of the sponsor in the home kit. And this is something that I'm sorry if whoever designed this kit is listening, whoever it is from Puma, whoever you think you are, right? But listen, I don't care if you meant to put it there. It doesn't matter. The point is, you must have looked... how many people did that go through? And everyone went, yep, that's perfect. Yeah, it's perfect there.
Matt Robinson, God rest his soul, he's still alive. It's fine. he helped design...
Oh, shit, yeah. Thank you, Matt, for doing the fanzine.
Which is great. He helped design the fanzine, put a lot of hard work in. As a man who works in graphic design, that must be like... you know, when you work in fitting tiles and someone puts on a tile the wrong way around, it's just like, why have you done that?
Or like when you fit tiles, you do this big bathroom, do the tile, the floor of the bathroom, the walls, whatever, and then someone just shits on it and they just fuck it from the start as well, and it's just there. Well, it must be like, fucked.
It must be when you're cooking a pizza and someone puts it in the oven and it's too hot. It's just ridiculous.
And then someone shits on the pizza and the pizza's fucked.
Well, someone puts all the pepperoni at the top of it and none of it around it.
Exactly,
no, damn it. I think we've tried to be a bit clever with it, and I have to say I'm not absolutely sure it's paid off universally, shall we say.
I don't like the kit that much, I'll be honest, but if you want to go and buy it, you're more than welcome.
Yeah, I mean... We could, that might be the next bit of merch from, unofficial UTAS shirts. That's not an official thing, by the way. I'm not advertising that they're available, but it could be an idea.
Put your noise away, Graham Daniels.
Yeah, we should talk about that first. But yeah, it's been good to be back on the pod and back into the swing of things. We're going to have more insight and factual stuff, probably.
Maybe we'll be... I might be a bit less critical about even recording a podcast next time and actually maybe provide some informative content, but thanks.
Can someone
for
else do it next time?
Yeah, get in touch, send your questions for next pod as well. We want to get those questions. Tom will ask you on Twitter, but cheers for listening, and we'll see you next time.